T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel. It all starts right here, right now, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Well, for a long time, baseball people, Memorial Day weekend was the beginning of the season in a lot of people's minds. Even though opening day was earlier, Bruce Levine, Memorial Day weekend used to be doubleheaders all the time. And really, it meant that life was beginning outside for the rest of the summer, and baseball a big part of that. I wish that were the case right now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Matt. Yeah, you're right. The three big days, the three big holidays during the baseball season. Memorial Day was that first post that you hit. July 4th, the second, Labor Day, you know, when everything looks set toward the playoffs and the teams that were going to be serious. This first post is not being hit, except for the fact that we're hearing about more negotiations between the owners and players. First about the medical, next early this week, we're supposed to hear another crucial part of this, and that is discussions of what players would get paid, what they would accept, what type of offer is being made from owners. We heard about 50-50 splits of revenue, players saying that wouldn't be sufficient. I'm being told it's going to be a different offer that doesn't necessarily present a 50-50 revenue split, but more of a salary-based offer, depending on games played and the season being finished. So it's going to be interesting to see those things and whether or not both sides will be leaking out information, much like it's been done over the past couple months.
Yeah, we should talk about some of the details of what we know happened this past week and what we believe is going to happen in the upcoming days. But first, let's tell people what's going on. You can always listen to the show as you are, or if you're not, I don't know how you're hearing this, but tell a friend that they should be listening. You can interact with us at 312-644-6767. You can text us at 670-11. And lots to discuss, and we'll be taking your phone calls. You'll also hear some sound from a couple of baseball guests with interesting and applicable thoughts that were on the score during the week. But we've got a couple of guests of our own starting at 9:30, Bruce.
Yes, we do. Wayne Randazzo, a Chicago guy, born and bred. Now one of the Mets broadcasters on radio will be joining us at 9:30. And then Chicago Cubs left-hander and ace John Lester will be joining us at 10 o'clock. So that's going to be some interesting conversation with John. Never a guy to hold back his thoughts. Always has a strong opinion as to what's going on. He will be joining us at 10 o'clock. Your phone calls, as Matt has stated, always a welcome part of our show at 312-644-6767. And Matt, let's just hop into it right now. This week in baseball, the players were going over documents sent over by the owners last week of how the baseball games and ballparks and hotel facilities would look, considering using private jets like they normally do. Everything that gets a ball player from his home to a visiting ballpark and plays a game as well as his own ballpark was in these documents. 67 pages were being disseminated by the Players Association on behalf of the players. And the rebuttal on that, from what I understand, will begin also relatively soon as to what things are workable for the players, what needs to be tweaked. Again, people should understand, and I don't know, Matt, if they do, that these are negotiations beginning. So when the owners offer a plan to the players, like this 67-page manuscript about how social distancing and medical will work for the players, it's a proposed plan, and it's been worked in depth for many, many hours by medical people, science people, baseball people, but it's only a negotiation. So
yes,
it's not locked in stone.
No, not at all. And apparently, from what I've heard, Bruce, it was taken in good faith by the players and by the ball clubs as a first draft, as like, here is your 67-page first draft. And it was incredibly thorough. But certain ball clubs have gotten back to MLB with some suggestions, what they think ought to be adjusted. And then, according to at least one source this week, the Players Union did respond to the health protocols proposal, and they asked for some things which I think makes sense, some things that that I think we believe they were going to ask. More testing frequency, asking for daily testing. This is according to Joel Sherman in the New York Post. Asking for the hydrotherapy pools to be usable and open. Hopefully the showering restrictions to be lifted, at least before they go on road trips, those kind of things. So the players, as you say, have negotiated back, and there will probably be more give and take about this. I'm glad that safety and that stuff has come first before the money, because anything they can do to increase the trust would be great. Anything they can do to make it feel like, and of course seem like publicly, that they have everyone's well-being in mind, it would be very welcome.
Well, and when you talk about well-being, Matt, I'll address this question to you, and that is, if you know that athletes or baseball players are getting preferential testing and extra testing and more medical than the average public people are you okay with that?
It's a big ask. It's a big ask, isn't it? Because it's a big ask. Are you okay with it, Bruce?
No, thanks for throwing it back to me, Matt. That shows your experience in this field. I don't know if I'm okay with that, and I don't know if that's the plan. So, you know, this is our perception that Major League Baseball's union is going to ask for extra testing. Will that be available to you and to your family and your loved ones? The same it would be to Major League Baseball, or is this an acceptable exception for sports to return, knowing and the public knowing that this is an entertainment form, an important one, and that they want not only athletes to be there and entertaining them, but also be healthy. Would that be an acceptable exception? And I really go up and back on that, because we all desperately want our sports back. We want it to be healthy. Mm-hmm. We want these guys to be in great condition. It's a sport where fans want to come back and be able to watch it. And in order for that to happen, we have to first ensure the health of the athletes and the people that are going to be in the arena.
Yeah, well, this is why I'm fascinated by one of the measures that's in there, is that the tests that MLB plans to use is the saliva test, not the swab test, which most people are familiar with, where the cotton swab goes up the nose, but the saliva test, which as of the last science that I read, is not quite up to speed yet. But MLB is investing in the production and testing of those tests, and then would be investing in the production of them, so they would have enough. And that would actually be doing some good towards society at large. If they can further the saliva test and make that more available, then they wouldn't be taking tests away from the hospitals that have to ration them at this point. and that kind of thing. So as MLB works with the anti-doping lab in Salt Lake City and does this, that to me would be a big, big deal if they can make the saliva test what they use.
And we also know that MLB employees were tested earlier back in April, and that many tests were done to make sure that everybody was well and safe. But again, the issue of the public getting the same chances that the sports players, and in this case, baseball players, would is a that is a hot topic, and it's as you informed me by throwing it back at me, there's no easy answer to that. You know,
I'm not going to live with that. I'm not going to live that one down for a while, and I should.
You can
folks.
Well, no, but I mean, you were right. You know, your perception of answering that was, hey, this is not an easy, there's no easy answer on this, you know? So from all of that, I would have to say that, you know, that was the proper answer, because you need more time to think about an answer like that. There's no right or wrong to that answer right away.
Well, here's the deal, Bruce. We've had to become not just economists and negotiation experts. I mean, last week you and I spent the better part of 2 hours dissecting the financials, and we could again. We've worked hard to try and understand this stuff, right? Now we're, of course, amateur epidemiologists, right? And now I mean, I know a tremendous amount about the safety and protocols. I would love for this to be what you posited before the show, and then I tweeted it, so I co-opted your thought. I'm great at that. But you asked before the show, is this the final week without a definitive yes or no of whether baseball returns? This very well could be. And wouldn't that be great to be talking about either baseball or no baseball in one way or the other? Obviously, we'd prefer baseball, but we might have that next week because the owners are going to sit, they're going to present their economic proposal on Tuesday. Right?
Yeah, you know what, Matt? It's not a horrible thing. No, the only horrible thing is that, you know, we don't have baseball. People aren't working. I mean, there's a lot of real horrible things out there. But deadlines in business are never, to me, a horrible thing. In this case, it's the doom and gloom of, well, if they don't meet the deadline, either side backs away. We're not going to have a season. There won't be any baseball. I think the players and the owners all feel that it's incumbent upon both sides to get a season in. They cannot play with this sport. Okay, we've talked about this numerous times. They cannot play that game of, hey, we'll just box the season and that's it, without showing the best effort on all these areas like they have been. You know, we hear too much about the economics of baseball and how that might ruin it. I don't think that's what it is. This is still all about safety, health issues, logistics of players playing, what happens when they do get sick. Those are the main issues, because once there's an agreement, and there will be at some point, fans just want that to go away. We don't want to listen about how these dollars are going to be split up once they're done. What we want to know is when they're going to play. Will it be safe to go? When will it be safe again for fans to be able to show up at ballparks? And will we have a sport that is viable for the next 3 months without interruption?
Right. Will we have games on TV as an option to watch and enjoy as the last dance is over? So people need something now more than ever. And all these, every sport is plotting and contemplating the ways that they might return. You said something that sparked my interest, Bruce. This economic proposal that is supposed to be presented to the players on Tuesday by the owners, you said it will not have, from what you believe, the 50-50 revenue split that had been out there and offered, the way that a lot of players had reacted to that, the way that the union had reacted to that publicly, that really seemed to be perhaps a non-starter in the negotiations. What can you tell us about what you've heard about might be in this proposal on Tuesday?
I do not have the exact way that it's going to be presented. I just was told by a couple sources that there would be a more creative way of giving them, the players, their money. Now, we know that players received $170 million for April and May. That was accepted. The Players Association took that money for the group. It was divided up among the players in whatever the ratios they felt players should be paid for the 750, or in the case of a 40-man roster, it would be 1,200 players. So whatever way that was divided up, it was. We have not gotten any information about how that was divided up and what percentages each player got. We've heard some dribs and drabs about, you know, how the percentages would work. Nothing definitive. In this case, it just won't be a pure 50-50. The main concern would be is lump sums of money, again, given to the Players Association as opposed to people being paid a salary. There's a big difference in that, Matt. I mean, you know, normally clubs are responsible for paying Chris Bryant $18 million a year, like the Cubs, okay? He gets $18 million. In these proposals and in this situation, clubs are not paying players individually their amounts of money. It's going to have to be revenues given to the Players Association and then divided by the Players Association for those players and divvied up the way that they figure, that they come up with their own configuration of how those salaries should be paid. That's a much different procedure than we're used to right now. So everything is different. I cannot give you the defined way that they're going to present the revenues and how they want to pay the players. I've just been told that it'll be more creative than just a 50-50 revenue split.
Well, what's interesting is that just the framework with which you said that the lump sum would go to the players' union and then they would divide, it's the owners putting the onus back on the players to share amongst themselves, saying, look, we're all trying to figure out how to make things work. We need your help. We understand that you don't want to trust us. Okay, well, we'll give you everything we get. Then you can decide what to do with it.
Yeah, and again, for the players, that to them, that's revenue sharing. That is accepting a salary cap.
Yes.
That's the first step and the first procedure toward we're establishing new rules. We agree that there should be a salary cap, that there should be a floor. And that presents an awful lot of red flags for the Players Association, the agents, and the players of those people to look at and say, well, you know, this is all about 2021 and after. It's not about paying players just in 2020.
You know, this thing that the players need to get over, and I hope that they are, is this idea that they had a deal in place. Because I know that the deal that they had for May said, and we will pay you the prorated amount for games if we do play some games. But there was a very clear, what I've seen categorized as, quote, clear as day, unquote, the clause in there that if they're going to play games without fans, that would fall under the reasonable realm of reopening the conversation, because that changes the revenue so dramatically. So the players and the union and Scott Boras and others have been so full of strong bluster about, we have a deal. We don't need to talk. No, you do need to talk. It's right there in the agreement that you made. They need to get over that part of it.
I do not have a horse in the race, Matt. I do not. My only horse is the fans' horse, okay? That baseball comes back and that the fans have their game back. Because ultimately, and we've talked about it on numerous occasions over this period of time, it's proven to be the fans' game more than ever. It's been hammered home more to the players and owners than ever before, because we see what type of impact it has on the game and the financial part of the game with no fans in the ballpark. That's just, you know, that's just the percentages of the fan impact when they don't go to the ballpark. That doesn't include everything else that goes along with fans watching on TV, fans buying merchandise. So this more than ever sets a precedent and hammers home the fact that without the fans, both sides have nothing. And certainly we've always known that, but nothing has hammered this home more than these last 8 or 9 weeks. And the fact that, you know, without them being able to participate, it's going to be difficult for Major League Baseball to put a product out there and to keep it interesting without that participation.
Without a doubt. We see across baseball organizations having to make lots of hard decisions. Some organizations agreeing to pay employees through June, the White Sox, the Cardinals, the Twins, among those who have agreed to do that. These are non-baseball employees. We've seen the Phillies deciding to keep everyone on payroll through October, the Tigers and Rockies keeping people on the payroll as long as possible. We've seen many other teams having to institute furloughs. We got a lot more information on the Cubs' new financial reality this week via our colleague David Haw over at the Scores website, Bruce. And you're talking about major, major pay cuts for the highest paid people within the organization, the president of baseball ops and the president of business ops, and David Ross and others took big, big pay cuts. They chose to do that instead of furloughs at this point.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that, and we want to get your input as well at 312-644-6767. Wayne Randazzo of the Mets joining us in about 10 minutes, and John Lester at the top of the hour. Again, 312-644-6767.
We will be right back on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Matt Spiegel. You're listening to 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. I'm Matt Spiegel. He's Bruce Levine. Bruce, as mentioned, our colleague David Haw wrote about the Cubs' new financial reality, a lot of details in there. What jumped out to you that we should share with the listeners?
Well, beginning with Theo Epstein, people are going to take a huge hit on their salaries going forward. If you consider that Theo Epstein makes $9.5 million a year, which is a lofty sum and something to be admired, that 35% is not going to come off the books, probably, I'm being told, for the next year. So with that in mind, it funnels down from there, employees, front office people, scouts, all the way down to, people that are entry level, all taking cuts from 10% to 35%. That's pretty significant, and it shows you the reality of the baseball world and the sports world and where we're at right now. And this is a very decisive thing that Tom Ricketts has done to not just address this for the next month or 6 weeks, but to take a long-term look at this and say, you know what, folks, so this is going to be for the next year.
Last week, Bruce, we talked a lot about the revenue sharing that usually goes on between the teams, because there's the big five or six that make a ton on day of game revenue, and then a lot of the others that make much less. And I appreciated the context from David that the Tampa Rays have game day revenues that hover around 25%. The league average is around 39%. Tom Ricketts had said in that Zoom call with season ticket holders last week that theirs, the Cubs, is around 70% from game day revenue. And one of the few publicly held franchises, the Braves, their company, Liberty Media, had to make it public. And apparently their revenue was 63% attributed to game day revenue. They were 12th in MLB attendance. The Cubs finished fourth. So it is not out of the realm at all that the Cubs' 70% is an accurate figure in terms of game day revenue.
No, I never doubted Tom Ricketts.
A lot of others did. A lot of others did.
I mean, why as an owner would you come out and say something that would be such a big factor and a huge amount of money and be false in that claim. I mean, it just
well, the thought was,
especially to the most, excuse me for a second, Matt, especially to the most important people, fan base, which is your season ticket holders. This was a private conversation with the season ticket holders that Tom was having along with Crane Kenny and, you know, a couple of the other executives of the Cubs. So why would you present something to the fans telling them how important they are, you know, sitting there listening to the call, maybe 10,000 strong, and then, you know, not be able to back that up?
I debated it with Parkins one afternoon when I was in for Mac and a couple other times on The Score, because the thought was that an owner like Tom would make that figure bigger than what it really was as a negotiating ploy, saying, see, we're making so little without the game days, that's why we have to ask you to take less. But the truth is that, and I think we've shown throughout the last couple of weeks, certain clubs make a lot more on game day than other clubs do. That's just a flat-out fact.
Without a doubt. And, you know, that included, before we get to our good friend Wayne Randazzo, but, Matt, that includes the LLCs that the Cubs are involved with and the footprint of Wrigley Field and the rooftops and the restaurants and whatever little parking they have. They don't own a lot of parking around there. But, you know, the reality that this is all about the Wrigley footprint and the 1060 project that we saw go up was not just about renovating the ballpark, but it was also investing in Wrigleyville and making that a go-to destination, not only for during baseball games 81 days out of the year, but all year long. And that's still a work in progress, and that has been uprooted at this point in time as well.
It's 670 The Score. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Matt Spiegel. And our next guest joins us right now as we broadcast live, by the way, from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers.
Well, Matt, it's always a pleasure to bring in a former teammate of ours and a former co-host on this show, Inside the Clubhouse. Our good friend Wayne Randazzo, the Mets broadcaster, does Mets radio with our good buddy Howie Rose in New York, joins us today. Good morning, Matt. How are you this morning? I mean, Matt.
Bruce.
Wayne.
Well,
even
we'll
if
right.
I got your name right? How are you, Wayne?
Hi, Bruce. Hi, Speaks.
Hey, Wayne.
How are we
nice
doing
to
today?
Talk to you.
What is New York all about right now? What is the perception of baseball coming back to New York City?
Well, you know, I think that people will welcome it as, you know, some sort of a distraction, some sort of a return to normalcy in at least a little bit of a way, although I think we'll find out pretty quickly that it will be anything but normal when baseball does come back because of all of the healthcare restrictions that have to be put in place and no fans in the stadium and all that. So I do think, though, that people are ready to have it. And I think a lot of people are looking back to September 11th and how the Mets' return, especially to Shea Stadium, was so impactful. Mike Piazza's home run in the first game back in New York after 9/11. And, you know, the Mets were leading the charge in what was then a return to normalcy after that tragedy. It's a lot different, but I do think that there is still that thought that New York City's been the epicenter of this thing here in this country, and that baseball coming back will have a sense of healing along with it.
Wayne, Canada and the Toronto Blue Jays will be in trouble in terms of the ability to use their home ballpark. Maybe they'll have to go down to Dunedin and play in their spring training facility if the plan that we've heard publicized takes place. How are the Yankees and Mets suited, according to the governor, the mayor, the people you've heard talk about it? Does it look like Yankee Stadium and Citi Field for the Mets will be usable?
I think so. The other day was a report that for spring training, they're going to go back to Florida. Both teams will go down to Florida to do their second part of spring training. It seems like some teams are choosing to stay in their home areas. I think the Pirates and Phillies are going to stay up in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, respectively. And some teams are going to return to their spring training locations, which it sounds like the Mets and the Yankees are going to do. But I do think that once the regular season begins, they're going to try to be in Citi Field and Yankee Stadium. You know, Governor Cuomo has already said that he will welcome them back and that they're ready to welcome them back. Mayor de Blasio's on board. So I think all the blessings have been had, and I think that the teams will be allowed to come back if they choose to. I know some of the thought process here behind having the teams play in their own stadiums as opposed to their spring training facilities is because of all the signage, that at least there will still be some money coming in for advertisements for having the signs in their ballparks up instead of being in their spring training facilities. So I'm sure as far as revenue is concerned, these teams do prefer to be in their home stadiums, even if there's no fans.
Wayne Randazzo joining us, the Mets broadcaster, obviously a great Chicagoan and a former teammate of ours on Inside the Clubhouse. And Wayne, broadcasting itself may be the ultimate challenge for the broadcasters who've done these games for decades and years, and all the facts about being a TV, but more importantly, maybe in this case, radio broadcaster. And whether or not radio broadcasters will be able to travel, TV broadcasters able to travel, we're hearing rumblings that they probably won't be. How would that challenge impact you and Howie and every other radio broadcaster when you're going to be possibly doing games off of a monitor for an entire half season?
Yeah, it's going to be a unique thing, especially even the home games, because there won't be any fans there, and there won't be any opportunity to really thrive off having that enthusiasm in the crowd. So, that's going to be an adjustment in and of itself. Now, for the road games, we're talking about the possibility of either doing them in the studio at WCBS or still doing the games at Citi Field, just because we'll have our booth and we'll have all that, and at least we'll be in a baseball stadium, even though we won't be in the same one that the Mets are playing in, and trying to figure out how to do it through the monitors. Now, I did college baseball at the Big Ten Network, and we often did the baseball and the softball games in the studio in Chicago, watching it off of two monitors. We'd have one with the live feed, and then another monitor that had all the camera angles. And I think those were four camera shows, so we had four different camera angles, so we can kind of see a complete picture of what was going on at the stadium that we weren't at. And they pumped in the Nat sounds, they pumped in the crowd noise, so there was at least some ambiance of the field in your head. And it was okay. It wasn't like you couldn't see things. It wasn't like there wasn't an opportunity to give a true call of the game. So yeah, I think that Howie and I will manage, and that will be fine.
Well, that's great. Didn't realize, Wayne, that you have such specific experience in that realm with the Big Ten baseball and softball, and the fact that you and the Mets broadcasters have discussed these possibilities and these options. It sounds like you're realizing the opportunity that's there to kind of shape a broadcast and also be honest with the listeners about the reality that we're in. Listeners. I think people are really responsive and receptive to the openness and the honesty of the situation, and a little more personality because of the awkward circumstance.
Yeah, I think that's it's going to be interesting for us. And it's on radio, we want to paint the picture. We want to be able to tell you how the infield is shifted and tell you where the outfielders are, and try to paint as much of what's going on as possible. So I'm hoping we're able to do that. It sounds like that, as far as the TV broadcasts go, that only the home TV feeds will be used. They're not going to send a road TV crew. They're not going to send a production truck. They're not going to send even road TV cameras. So, if the Cubs are playing the Cardinals, you're going to get the Cardinals feed for the Cubs TV broadcast. Len and JD will still be the announcers, but they're going to have to go by whatever pictures the Cardinals are showing in that particular game. So that will be an adjustment in and of itself. It'll be a lot different. I know last year the Mets TV set up a booth cam. You know, a lot of different broadcasts have done the booth cam where you can kind of see the reactions of broadcasters as things are happening. I think we're going to have one in our booth this year just to kind of show something, because there aren't many people that are going to be in these games or in these ballparks. Yeah, I think there's going to be a limit even on game day for the employees as to how many can be there. So it's going to be different times for everybody, but I think that we'll adjust to it for the time being and hopefully get back to what our normal travel schedules look like and our normal broadcasts are as soon as possible.
Wayne, what did the Mets look like as spring training closed out on March the 13th and baseball was suspended? How were they looking? What were the expectations with the new manager and, some new ideas about that rotation still picking up where it had left off 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, there was a lot of optimism around the Mets, even more so offensively than with the pitching. You know, the way Pete Alonso came along as a rookie last year and how Jeff McNeil's been over the last year and a half since his call-up to the big leagues and how the team has really tried to create a new culture there. I mean, these guys have really an incredible camaraderie, with J.D. Davis, with Dominic Smith, so, Michael Conforto, they've really gelled together incredibly well, and they were excited to play for Louis Rojas, the new manager. It's not a familiar name, but he is certainly related to a lot of familiar names. His brother is Moises Alou. His dad is Felipe Alou. He's got this great baseball lineage. He is as steady and sturdy as they come. He managed in the Mets farm system for over 10 years. He's still in just his upper 30s, still a pretty young guy for a big league manager, so they all respect him. They've mostly played for him. A lot of guys that have come up through the farm system have already played for Louis, and there's certainly a big difference in the managerial chair for the Mets this year. So they were looking forward to being a competitive team this year. Now in a short season, half a season, I wonder how it's going to look if you're a team like the Mets and you've got one enormously great pitcher in Jacob DeGrom. Do you just pitch him every fifth day no matter what? Do you skip the other guys in the rotation to make sure that he pitches as many of these 80 games as possible? And I think that's something that they need to look at, especially with Noah Syndergaard. He's not available this year. He's having Tommy John surgery, so we won't see him. Zach Wheeler left in free agency, so the starting pitching might not be exactly what it was, how it's been the last few years, but I think where they are offensively, I think how they've built up their bullpen, they've added Dellin Betances, and I also think that they're one of the few National League teams suited for having a DH. They already have a plethora of position players. If Yoenis Cespedes gives them anything this year as far as an offensive player is concerned, he's the perfect DH for them. So, I think if things are going to change in a lot of ways here, that the Mets can actually roll with the punches better than most.
It's nice to talk baseball, real baseball, and to talk about what a short season might be. Let's hope this is the last week without a definitive yes or no, and hopefully we get a yes. Thank you, Wayne.
Wayne, we appreciate it very much, buddy. Thank you so much, and stay happy and healthy. Thanks again for joining Matt and I on Inside the Clubhouse.
All right, sounds good. Take care, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Wayne.
Wayne Randazzo, Mets broadcaster, lifelong Chicagoan, and former host of this show and teammate of ours at The Score, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. And if you stay tuned, of course, John Lester will join us at the top of the hour.
I felt you really enjoying Wayne as your former co-host right there, Bruce. That was awkward for me.
Was that painful for you, Matt?
Oof, man, I just, who else do you want to get on?
He was actually a teammate of yours, too. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Wayne's the goods, and I'm thrilled for his success. Very, very deserving, without a doubt. As Bruce mentioned, John Lester, top of the hour. Looking forward to that. Your phone calls and texts, always welcome on Inside the Clubhouse, right here on 670 The Score. Welcome back in on 670 The Score. He's Bruce Levine. I am Matt Spiegel. John Lester of the Cubs is going to join us right around the top of the hour right here on The Score. Love the thought from Wayne Randazzo, Bruce, about maybe the Mets using Jacob deGrom every fifth day, no matter what the schedule says. You want to put him out there as much as possible. You've talked about the possibility of teams using openers and approaching the pitching staff that way. There's going to be a lot of room for some creativity here. That's also going to, of course, have to take the health of the players into account from the managers.
Yeah, I think you're right. And depending upon what that taxi squad is going to be like, so to inform people, you know, baseball is talking about expanding to maybe 30, 35 people available for your roster and in 2020 only, and the ability to name your 25 or 26, which what it was supposed to be the number this year, on a given day. That's also possibility of experimental for the future as well when we approach a new CBA in 2021 and going past that. So, you know, the universal DH is going to be a part of this. This type of experimentation will be interesting. So the creativity of new rules and new ideas might go along with, as you put it, Matt, you know, protecting your pitchers, not forcing them to pitch too much, certainly initially. If you're only going to have a three-week spring training, you're not having Jacob deGrom or John Lester or pitchers like that throwing six or seven innings and throwing 100 pitches after an aborted spring training and then a new three-week-long spring training. That is certainly not going to be prudent as you move forward.
Remember what the Rockies tried, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago, piggybacking. Mm-hmm. And it's happened in the minor leagues in a couple of different organizations. But the Rockies on the big league level did a piggyback. So not really an opener, but they would have two starters assigned to a given day, and each one would go three or four innings as needed. And I think that if I were a manager, I would think about that, just giving all my guys a chance to keep stretching out over those first few weeks while I piggybacked when applicable.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from a numbers part, it might make sense, and from a fact that you want to get these guys in shape, but how many teams have that many quality pitchers to roll out there? And and how many relievers are used to throwing more than just one inning, or in special cases, just two? I mean, we do live in the era of specialty relievers that are a big part of the game. So, you know, rolling them out past one inning, having more than one long man on your team or in your organization might be the way to go this year. You know, instead of a guy like Alzolay possibly going back to the minor leagues this year, might he be a long man and might he pitch two or three times a week in a new specified role? That might be something that we see going forward this season.
Would make a lot of sense. And then, and then Wayne talking about, as you had asked, broadcasting road games possibly from the studio, or Wayne said maybe from Citi Field in their booth, depending on the monitor situation. We got word this week from Matt Vasgersian, the play-by-play man of ESPN, Sunday Night Baseball. He was on a podcast in Chicago, actually, and had and he said that they suspect they will not be traveling for Sunday Night Baseball broadcasts, that it will they'll be doing the games from the studio. I wonder what press row is going to look like during a ball game, Bruce.
It's going to be very sparse and spread out. And I'm sure affiliates, you know, radio, television affiliates, national writers are going to be severely limited. Not only is amounts let in the ballpark, but access, I think, will be curtailed almost entirely to probably either behind partitions or maybe more appropriately in conferences that you pick up on your telephone. That's probably the more likely way that we're going to be interviewing and talking to players in 2020 if there's a baseball season.
And finally, some of those players get what they want. You, me, all of us, out of that clubhouse. They'll be thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them don't like it, but there's plenty that love the discourse, and they all will find out, if they don't already know, that baseball is so uniquely enjoyed by fans because of the amount of information that is out there for them, and the inside stuff and the features that are run on television, radio, and in print or on the internet. That is the lifeblood of baseball, and I don't say it just because we make our living at it. The reason we do make our living at it was for that reason alone, in most cases, was the fact that, hey, you could get great information. You knew more about the sport than the other sports because the great reporters out there giving you information as you were growing up, falling in love with sports and baseball in particular, and then going into it as a field.
Without a doubt. And there's an appetite for it. There's, all right, this guy said this. What do you think about that? Well, you know, you've got to have that interaction to really get anywhere. It's Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score. Later on next hour, you'll hear from some compelling guests that were on The Score this week with some stuff that maybe you might have missed. A player, a broadcaster, and a Hall of Fame writer. But when we come back, John Lester of the Cubs is expected to join us right here on 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.